There's the good old information please rooster asking you to wake up, America. It's time to stump the experts. Tonight, the H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, welcomes the no less famous information please brainstormers. This is the first information please play party to take place under the Heinz sponsorship. Now, those of you who don't know how this play party works, listen carefully. There's a quartet of experts here, ready and willing and even able, sometimes, to answer your questions. You send us your puzzlers. If one is used, the H.J. Heinz Company will gladly give you $10 in war stamps, plus a set of the 12-volume Junior Encyclopedia. Got that? Now, if the experts can't answer your question, you get $57 of war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. If you got any more than that, you'd have to set up house in Grand Central Station. Send your questions to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. We may change them around a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. All questions remain our property. Information Please is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, the House of 57 Varieties opens its doors to our Master of Ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Thanks, Ben Grauer. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our coming out party under the sign of the H.J. Heinz Company. And naturally, we're all a little nervous, as well as more than a little delighted. Tonight, to add to the famous 57 varieties, we have four odd varieties of our own. The Information Please panel of experts. First, our regulars. Our encyclopedic cerebrator, conductor of the column, One Small Voice, the inexhaustible John Curran. Second, our musical prodigy, the pianist and composer, America's foremost problem child, the unpredictable Oscar Levant. Third, our dean of information pleasers, the unparalleled Franklin P. Adams. And finally, our guest, the star of the Star Theater, which you may hear every Sunday night, Mr. Fred Allen. Now, bright as Mr. Allen is, we figure we can exhaust his knowledge in about 20 minutes. And so we've arranged that later on in the program, Mr. Allen himself will become the master of ceremonies, and I will join my colleagues at the experts' table. Now, I want to remind old listeners and inform new ones that this is a completely unrehearsed, spontaneous program, a catch-as-catch-can affair, no holds barred, and our first challenge comes from Patricia Charles of Forest Hills, New York. We have to get all on these gentlemen. It's a three-part question. What is each of the following? And each of the following has the word short in it. The first is short suit. What's a short suit? Mr. Levant.
It's bridge.
And what does it mean?
I don't play bridge.
Well, that gives about 10% on that answer. Mr. Curran?
Well, a short suit in bridge would be one in which of which you had no holding cards at all, or you might have one or two. A two would be a real short suit out of 13 cards. You have two clubs or two diamonds, whatever it is. And you make a bid in corresponding with your holding in a short suit, provided you have other things to make up for it, as, for instance, length and trump.
Is that okay, Fred?
As far as I'm concerned, I don't know. I have short arms. I don't play cards.
I'm sure that's the perfect answer. Now, how about a short snorter, gentlemen? What's a short snorter, Mr. Allen?
A short snorter is some association that exists among pilots, people who fly on planes.
You're
I'm
wrong.
A short snorter, but I was made one in a hurry in the...
That's incorrect.
Oh, he's right so far.
It isn't pilots. It's traveling across
pilots
the ocean.
Too.
Yeah, well, what does it mean exactly, Mr. Levant?
Any of these transoceanic flights, they must buy a drink, and then everybody autographs a dollar bill. They must not lose this dollar bill upon request of any other member. If it's lost, they must buy another round of drinks.
Well, I didn't cross the ocean. I got mine coming from Minneapolis to Chicago. We didn't cross any water. And there was nothing to drink on the plane, and I have a dollar with everyone's name on it, and I'm a short snorter, and I doubt if Mr. Levant is a short snorter.
you better look that bill
no,
over.
No, but he's not a pilot. He said it was
well,
a
I'm
pilot.
A short snorter.
You don't have to, you just have to be a passenger. Who is one of the most famous of recently made short snorters, Mr. Curran?
Wendell Wilkie for
Franklin
one.
Franklin D. Roosevelt.
For one. Franklin D. Roosevelt for another, yes. Now, what, gentlemen, is a short stout? A short stout, Mr. Curran?
Well, a short stout is a measure of clothing.
Yes?
When a man walks in, well, his suit, well, or a pair of pajamas, or any other article that a man might wear.
Yeah.
Or a lady,
five.
For that matter.
Five by five.
Short
five
suit.
By five.
Yeah. What did you say, Mr.?
It's a short suit.
Yes. Yes. Well, that gives us three shorts out of three. Now, how about this one from Mrs. Ruth Knees of Montclair, New Jersey? Identify the obscure halves of these famous teams. Who rode, for example, with Paul Revere? We hear a lot about Paul Revere, but there was another chap who rode with him, Mr. Adams.
William Dawes.
William Dawes, yes, and we should remember him. How about someone who served with William Howard Taft? Who was that?
What do you mean by serve?
Along with him.
He's a fat man. I don't know what you mean.
Served, as presumably, as vice president. Who was that?
Oh.
Mr. Kieran?
Was that Fairbanks?
James Schoolcraft Sherman.
Very right. Good, Mr. Sorry. Adams.
James? Of Utica, New York.
Did you know him, Frank?
Nope. I read the papers in those days.
Now, here's another and final obscure have. Who acts with Mary Livingston? Mr. Allen?
The obscure half?
Yeah.
Would be Jack Benny.
Yeah, well, I'll give you 3 seconds on Jack Benny, if you wish, Mr. Allen.
On Jack Benny?
Yeah.
I couldn't even preface what I might want to say about him in 3 seconds.
All right. Jack Benny is right, and that gives us 3 out of 3, making 1.5 altogether. How about this one from Lou Smith of New York City? Identify the tough pug of the ring whose activities were supervised by this member of the gentler sex. For your information, Oscar, that means women.
Fitzsimmons is the answer to that one.
Now, wait a minute. The question,
what were you saying, Fred?
Well, they don't let you finish the questions. I'm a guest here, and it's the first time the guest hasn't been right because I can't get an answer into the questions. If he won't let you ask the questions.
Adam won't give you a chance. Now, who was supervised, what pugilist was supervised by his mother? Mr. Kieran.
Stribling. Young Stribling.
Yes, that's right.
And also his father.
Where's father?
They're not mentioned on this card.
They had a trailer. They went all around the country in a trailer, didn't they, John?
Yeah.
And how about someone who was sort of managed by his sister? Mr. Levant.
Levinsky, Battling Levinsky.
Is that the same as Kingfish Levinsky?
Kingfish, that's right.
Kingfish is the one. And how
about... Don't take a check either name. That's all right.
This one ought to be easy to answer. A pug who is managed by his wife.
That's Fitzsimmons. He said, jab him in the slats.
She said, jab him. That right, John?
Well, so they say. I wasn't there.
Lou Jenkins.
Lou Jenkins, I guess.
Katie, they're divorced now.
Yeah. All right, that gives us 3 out of 3. Now, how about this one from Mrs. Emmett Brown of Rosalia, Kansas? What's the source of these famous American phrases? The first is very short. He's a card. Where does it come from? He's a card. C-A-R-D. Not the... Baseball team, no.
Mm-hmm.
He's a card.
Well, I don't know, but that is usually British.
Well, it's American in this case.
A card?
Yeah, he's a card. It's a sentence reiterated in a famous short story by Ring Lardner. What's the short story called?
You know me, Al?
No.
No, it's a story where a man is killed. He's taken out in a boat, I think.
Haircut, yes.
Isn't that the story?
It's about a practical joker who gets people into lots of trouble.
The man takes him out in a boat and shoots him.
I think that's right. That's one wrong. Now we have to get the next two right.
Where did the card come in?
He's a card?
Card.
That's what the barber says about the guy in the story.
I see.
You don't want me to tell the whole story,
No,
do you,
I thought it had some significance. It turns out to be...
Not a bit.
It's
just a way of stumping the experts. Here's another phrase. He could whip his weight in Wildcats. What's that from? Who said it? Mr. Adams.
Eugene Field.
That's right. Very good. What's it from, Mr. Adams? Remember?
I think that's from all them days on Red Horse Mountain.
It's from a poem called Majeski as Camille.
That's the way it begins.
That's the way it begins. Very good. Now, that's going back a long way. How about this one? Have you ever been to Cincinnati?
I know that.
Do you, Mr. Levant?
Prince of Pilsen.
That's good.
I saw it in the light opera comedy.
When?
When I was a kid, the Aborn Light Opera Company used to come to Pittsburgh. My brother played there, and I sat in the pit for nothing. Was you ever in Cincinnati?
That's exactly right. All right. All right, we'll interrupt for a moment while our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, in these Information Please programs, brings you tonight vital information to help solve your wartime food problems. But I'd better let him tell you himself. Mr. Grauer.
The new sponsor of Information Please, the H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties of fine foods, plan to use this program to bring you helpful information on wartime food problems. The latest authoritative news on current food supplies, regulations, and rations. Since 1869, Heinz has supplied quality foods to the nation and has contributed to our American tradition of good eating, and for many years offered mealtime planning service to the housewives. Today, when food is a matter of vital importance, we are eager to help answer a few of the many questions that are stumping the experts in our own homes, those busy women who must plan, buy, and prepare the meals that make America strong. And so, each Monday night at this time, when Information Please pays you a visit, we'll try to have some interesting and up-to-the-minute information about the food you eat.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. And now we'll go on with a question from Elizabeth Cook of Fall River, Massachusetts. And this is a musical question. I think we ought to get all on it. What doctor would you see for each of the conditions described in the following songs? Let's have the first. I've got two hands. Mr. Allen?
A dermatologist.
Good work. Why?
Well, if I had you under my skin, I'd certainly go to somebody right away because it would be very uncomfortable. And I would go to a skin specialist,
that's
naturally.
Right. You need more than a dermatologist.
Unless I was
case.
A kangaroo, then I'd ignore the whole thing.
Huh? Now the second of these. What doctor would you go to see for this one? Mr. Levant.
Orthopedist. Although he wouldn't help me.
Oh, don't say that. You give up in advance.
I have flat feet. He never cured me.
He never did?
No.
Might have been his musical association. His feet might have fallen a half a tone on account of all of the...
No, front. I think it's hereditary. I mean it.
Really?
Yeah, I don't
Papa,
want you to...
Mama? Uncle?
Well, many... We call it the flat-footed Levant.
And the song that was being played by a pianist was
flat-footed,
what?
Flat-foot Fluji.
Flat-foot Fluji. All right. Now, let's get the next one. Is that your hand, Mr. Allen?
Part of it, yes. I'm not sure. I only put up part of my hand, if you don't mind.
Well, let me have part of the answer.
I'm falling in love. I'd see a minister or the girl's father.
I'd see a psychoanalyst.
Well,
why,
it all depends.
Why would
on...
you see a psychoanalyst, Mr.
I'd see one without this question.
Too late.
Oscar is always plugging his friends. What was the song called, Oscar?
I didn't have part of my hand up. Mr. Allen did.
No, but I'd like to know what the song was called. I bet you know
he
it.
He said Falling in Love. I don't know it.
That isn't the same as I Don't Want to Get Well, is it?
I don't know the song.
It's called I Don't Want to Get Well.
That's right.
And well, the answer is...
psychoanalyst.
Yes, a psychiatrist. Right. You just guessed that?
Oh, that was after Mr. Allen's finger was up.
Yes, when I put it down, he gave me...
Yeah, I don't think I'll give you a... I don't think I'll give you a perfect on that.
Well, that neither
sends,
one of us
I think
know.
We'll send $57. Note that, 57.
57.
Yeah. In war bonds and stamps to Miss Cook and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now here's one from R.H. Casson of Macon, Georgia. I think we ought to get all on this one, too. Complete the line of poetry that includes these phrases. Out of the night... Mr. Kieran?
That covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole.
Yes.
Invictus by Henley. William Ernest Henley.
Good enough. Mr. Adams had his hand up, too. And how about this one? Out of the everywhere. Mr. Adams?
Where did you come from, baby dear? Out of the everywhere, into the here.
That's very nice, Mr. Adams.
Question mark.
Yes. Who wrote it?
I don't know.
Would you like to know?
I'd love to know.
Oh, I'm going to tell you. George MacDonald. George MacDonald. Now, how about this one? Out of the cradle, Mr. Kieran?
Once Pomonic, when the fifth month grass was growing. Out of the cradle, endlessly rocking by Walt Whitman.
Yes, that's beautiful. So that's a far get. Do you like that?
I think the racetrack people pronounce it Pomonoc.
Pomonoc. What is it?
It's a race named after it.
What is Pomonoc, or what part of the country is Pomonoc?
It's down in Long Island.
It is Long Island. And doesn't the name mean, isn't it Indian for fish-shaped or something like that?
I believe
that?
It does.
Especially Long Island is shaped something like a large fish. Well, we did get 3 out of 3 on that. Now, how about this one? From Mrs. Rose Kaplan of Stafford Springs, Connecticut. Give 4 slang expressions or colloquialisms that might be used, metaphorically, to heat the house. For example, to put on the heat would be a phrase in which high temperature is involved. Let's see if we can get a few more, Mr. Allen.
Get hot?
Yeah. Mr. Kieran.
You burn me up.
Yes, that are 2 very good ones. Now we've got the house up to about 64 now.
Turn on the steam.
Turn on the steam. Turn on the heat.
I'm steaming.
Yes, get off steam. There are a lot of others.
It's pretty hard to get off steam.
Hot cookie, yes. That's good. Get the heating up. How about...
Cooking with gas isn't bad.
No, that isn't bad. Rake him over the coals. A lot of hot air. Banana oil, maybe. Any of those.
Hot foot.
Hot foot, sure. How about this one from Lieutenant F.R. Wintger of Asbury Park, New Jersey. How did these numbers figure in recent or current news? First, number 17 until June 15th. Mr. Allen.
The 17 is the coupon in your coffee and sugar book that entitles you to 3 pairs of shoes.
Only one.
One pair of shoes.
Yes, 3 pairs in a
3
year.
3 pairs in a year.
You only one long. Shoe, as a matter of fact. Okay.
Well, that's if you're a monopede, you get 1 shoe and 1/2 pound of coffee.
Now, what does this mean to you, gentlemen? 48 in 32 areas. 48 in 32 areas. Mr. Allen again.
48-hour week in 32 areas around the country.
That's right.
The various industries.
Yes, what were you going to say, Mr. Adams?
Exactly that.
Yeah, you just follow Allen. You'll be all right on this show.
He would have worded it better, I'm sure.
How about this one? Number 1 for 57. Mr. Kieran.
This show for the Heinz people.
Thank God. We're good for another week. And now Mr. Grauer has a word for us about a man we used to take for granted. The man who sells the groceries that grace our dinner tables.
Yes, Mr. Fadiman. War means new problems for all of us. But there's one man who has more than his share of headaches, and that is your grocer. He is short of many familiar items, and he's short of help. He will have the equal of your food problems multiplied by the hundreds of customers he serves. Now, over the years, we have known your grocer mighty well. And he's the kind of a man who really deserves your help and consideration. So please plan your marketing carefully. Do your buying early in the day and early in the week. Meanwhile, when it seems as though your grocer is always out of the very item you want, don't blame him. Blame Hitler, Hirohito, and Benito. A smile, a friendly, sympathetic attitude will do wonders in a grocery store nowadays. For just remember, your grocer would much rather sell you all the things you want to buy. It's no fun for him to have to say no. So make this Be Kind to Your Grocer week by showing him every courtesy and giving him every break you can. He really deserves it.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. And now Fred Allen has done about as much of this program as is possible, acting as an expert. He will complete the job from now on as MC, and I'll rough things up on the mourner's bench over there with Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, and Mr. Levant. Here we go.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Fadiman. I know that honoring the Heinz company will try to keep things in the pickle as we go from now. I know that many people, who at one time or another have wished they could inflict corporal punishment on a radio comedian. You are the first person to have the pleasure of giving a comedian the chair, and I hope that you enjoy it. Are you comfortable, Mr. Fadiman?
No.
You're not comfortable, huh? Well, now, for the first time, I realize what you go through. As I sit here and look at the Committee of Experts head on, I realize what you put up with each week.
It looks just as bad from over here.
Well, I know, but I have it multiplied by 4. You can imagine what I'm going through. But we'll try to keep up the fast tempo Mr. Fadiman has set. And our first question comes from Mrs. Ann Smith, Helena, Montana. Gentlemen, I'd like to have you get all of these, if you don't. Mr. Fadiman is making a face at me, but I have a face already made which will outdo anything that he can hope to. Now, continue the quotations or popular expressions which begin with these words. Remember, we must get all. What quotations? I'm going to sit right down, Mr. Levant.
And write myself a letter.
That's right.
A love letter.
Well, it doesn't say here, just any sort. It seems to be
suggested.
Well,
what would you do?
Well, I think I'll sit right down and write myself a letter. I would think it would be suggested by a man who was on a draft board and saw his own number coming up. That would be my impression. The second is, peace,
sit you down.
What?
Peace, sit you down.
Peace?
Peace?
Yes, continue the quotation. Peace, P-E-A-C-E, sit you down.
And pass the ammunition?
No. This is peace, sit you down. It's not what Father Divine says before dinner. It's another...
Is it from Macbeth?
No, that's close, Mr. Fadiman, I must say. You have the right author, but the wrong work.
I know, it's Shakespeare.
It's Shakespeare. Mr. Adams...
Don't know.
Well, all right, then. The third is sit down. Sit down. Mr. Levant.
You're rocking the boat.
Exactly, Mr. Levant. That's
Macbeth.
Great. No, we only get that. Do you please sit down? Would you like to have another go at that, Mr. Kieran?
No, I don't want any part of it.
You give... pardon?
It's peace, lie down.
No, peace, sit you down and let me wring your heart, for so I shall, if it be made of penetrable stuff. It's Hamlet to Gertrude.
That's hard. That's too hard.
Well, I know. I didn't miss
it. We never say that to you.
Well, I know, but I'm not saying it to you, only in behalf of Mrs. Ann Smith of Helena, Montana, who probably wanted to get the question out of town, as far as I know. Sit down. Sit down. Sit down might have been what we lose on that, don't we? And so then we send Mrs. Ann Smith of Helena, Montana, $57 from the Heinz people, a war bond. Isn't it a war bond and stamps? $57. And a full set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, which Mr. Adams, FPA, will deliver personally tomorrow morning. Now, our next question from Phyllis Colbert, Chicago, Illinois. We'd like to have you get 2 out of 3. What characters of literature make these transitions? What character is hit on the head with a crowbar in a democracy and finds himself in a feudal society? Mr. Fadiman.
Fellow in Mark Twain's Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court.
That's right.
This job is easy.
Well, you haven't identified the man. You just some fellow. There were
fellow
two or three
named,
fellows.
Had a Yankee name. Very good Yankee
Hank,
name. Two syllables.
Will Rogers did it in the picture.
Well, I know, but before it had to be written before Mr. Rogers did it. Well, Mr. Fadiman is correct. It's Hank Morgan in A Connecticut Yankee by Mark Twain. Good word. Could a man be hit on the head with a crowbar in a democracy these days?
Easily.
Can do it
Not
on
out
program.
Of the comic strips.
Not out of the comic strips. I doubt it, because if the crowbar owner had given the bar in and the scrap drive, there'd be nothing to hit him with. The second part is, what character takes a strong drink in a monarchy and wakes up in a republic? Takes a strong drink in a monarchy. Mr. Adams?
Rip Van W. Winkle.
That is correct. Did you know what strong drink Mr. Van Winkle took?
It was supposed to be ale, which addled his poor head sadly.
Oh, I see. Well, what character... That shuts me up, incidentally. What character falls into a hypnotic sleep in a capitalist society and awakes in a socialist commonwealth? Mr. Fadiman.
The hero in Looking Backward by Edward Bellamy, I think.
Julian West, that's correct. That's 2 out of 3, and we pass on to our next question, a rather simple question from Fred Allen, New York City. Now, here are some passages from a group of great thinkers. Who are they? This is an easy question, so you have to answer all 3 parts, gentlemen.
What was that again, Fred? I didn't hear it.
The question... I haven't come to the question yet. The question is so easy, I will allow you 3 seconds for each answer. Now, the first, should the nebula hypothesis ever be established, then it will become manifest that the universe at large, like every organism, was once homogeneous. Mr. Levant.
The Rommel plan.
That's close, but it's not the right answer. Mr. Kieran?
Is that on the level?
Yes, this is on the level. I see we don't know it, gentlemen. It comes from Herbert Spencer. It's in Social Statistics. Now, the second part of our question, there is therefore no way of avoiding the conclusion that the pure conceptions of understanding can never be employed transcendentally, but only empirically, and that the principles of pure understanding can apply only to objects of sense. Now, what great thinker? Mr. Fadiman?
Might be Kant.
That is correct, from the Critique of Pure Reason.
How do you know?
And, Mr. Adams, did you have something to add?
That's just what I was going to say. You put the word out of my
You wouldn't
mouth.
Want to take it apart and explain any part of it, would you? The third part is, this essential being is the union of the subjective with the rational will. It is the moral whole, the state. which is that form of actuality in which the individual has and enjoys his freedom. Mr. Fathom.
See, the Aristotle of Spinoza.
No.
Tom Paine.
No.
You're a gag writer.
No. It might have been. I have one name. I don't know. It could have been. Mr.
Is Garrett? That one of the James boys?
No.
Jesse?
No.
No, this is...
Darwin.
Pardon?
Darwin.
Not Darwin, no.
I give up.
Goldwyn.
Goldwyn. Goldwyn and Darwin, they're not the same, are they? But the this is by Hegel from the Philosophy of History. And so, gentlemen, I've always wanted an encyclopedia. Tonight we send an encyclopedia to Fred Allen, care of the Texaco Star Theater. Now, our next question... Well, thank you very much. I won't want the $57. You can give that to some charity, if you will. And charity begins at home, and Mr. Levant knows where I live. Now, from Charles E. Barton, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 2 out of 3, gentlemen. What contemporary writer characterized a woman or women in his books as a mouse? What,
Eddie Cannon.
No.
Contemporary writer?
Contemporary writer.
Shakespeare did.
As a mouse?
Disney.
Sure, he said, sweep my mouse of virtue.
No.
Disney.
Mr. Adams?
Damon Runyon.
Not Damon Runyon.
Mark Hollinger.
Mark, no.
Disney.
Not Disney. He might have done it with ink. This man did it with a typewriter.
It's in Pal Joey.
That's right.
That's right. Right. John O'Hara.
John O'Hara.
Refers to a woman as a mouse. What the contemporary writer characterizes a woman as a rabbit?
Thoreau.
Some single man.
What doesn't?
You missed it by a hair, Mr. of which you haven't any too many, Mr. Adams. Rabbit. You give up?
Give up.
Give up. All right. Ernest Hemingway and For Whom the Bell Tolls. Now, the next, what contemporary writer characterizes woman as a turtle dove? This seems full of
you. W.C. Fields.
W.C. Fields is right. And what work, Mr. Levant? What book of his?
The Bank Deck, which is not a work.
Oh, The Bank Deck. Not a work of art.
No, the one with that nice...
Well, that was a picture.
Lady.
That wasn't a book. So we have 1 minute. Will I have time to start this next one, you think? What did we do on that? Did we get 2 out of 3? We didn't get 2 out of 3. We got 1 out of 3. And so, $57 in war bonds. I'll bring back prosperity if I stay on here. Goes to Mr. Charles E. Barton of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, from J.J. Bartholomew Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, 2 out of 3. What happens to the heroines of these complicated love stories? Helena loves Demetrius, who loves Hermia, who loves Lysander. Mr. Kieran.
Why, it all gets straightened out. That's Midsummer Night's Dream, Shakespeare.
That is correct. Now, Constantine loves Kitty, who loves Alexa, who loves Anna.
Is that Anna Karenina?
That is correct.
Anna Karenina.
Elliot has married Sybil, though he still loves Amanda, who has married Victor.
Private Lars.
That is correct.
Victor
that
and Coward. Noel Coward.
Yeah. Noel Coward's play. And the other was Tolstoy's Anna Karenina. Anna commits suicide at the end of the book. Previously, she had run off with Alexei Vronsky.
I got to interrupt, Fred, because
Thank
that's
you.
About all we'll have time for. We got through our first play party at the House of 57 Varieties with a net loss of...
Fred Allen.
Good heavens. Net loss of $228 in war bonds and stamps and 4 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, Mr. Allen, no one can say that you didn't and I didn't do your and our share tonight to help the Treasury Department. Now, next week, the H.J. Hines Company has arranged for Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran to strut their stuff. And as guests, we've invited our old friend, the author of Thoroughfare, the famous novelist Christopher Morley. Plus, an extra special attraction, our good friend Gregory Ratoff. Mr. Ratoff was invited to come east and be with us, but he's up to his waistline in his new MGM picture, Russia. And so we've arranged for him to be our guest by remote control from Hollywood. Next week, we'll hear from Mr. Ratoff in California, where he'll signal us by a bell in his own studio with his own audience. Remember, send your questions with the correct answers to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City.